call, please.
Yes, Mr. Heck.
Here.
Mrs. Myers.
Here.
Mr. Van Wachanova.
Here.
Mrs. Williams.
Here.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Here. Can we stand for the pledge, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next up is our discussionary items, and I will turn it over to Superintendent Shaw.
All right, well, thank you very much tonight, sir. So staffing update, and that will be Cindy Flynn.
Thank you. Before I get started, Mr. Heck had made an inquiry and asked to have a discussion at our meeting about the sports trainer. Tom, are you the sports performance coach?
Yes, Kari Dickey. Yeah,
yes, Kari Dickey. She's a pre-teacher. We don't bring pre-teachers to the board. They're people that sometimes have a bachelor's degree, sometimes have both, but are going to become a teacher, like through a Teach for Tomorrow or just plain teach. And she's teaching two sections of sports performance at the end of the day at MHS, and then she is working with students in the evening, either before their practices, during their practices, and after. And she is on a full-year teaching permit the district pulled for her. Mm-hmm. And the pre-teachers that we hire are the teacher of record. So it was posted. I have a resume if you'd like to see it in the job posting. And I do believe that Mr. Hessen, or Dr. Hessen, did receive a grant to pay for this position also.
So she's a trainer?
She's a trainer. They have the weight room.
Are they working with the, what is the ATI? Who's our training people?
Her title is actually a sports performance coach.
Yeah.
So they don't work together? Is separate?
They're two different things. I'm sure that they collaborate in some aspects, but it's two totally different positions.
Okay.
Yeah, it's two different positions. They work together, but hers is more about the strength training, nutritional training, health training. Our trainer with ATI is more about, and so she also works preventative. Our athletic trainer is more about when a student gets a concussion or there's an injury that she's addressing that. This person would not address that. She also works, and it is 7-12, so it's not just high school kids she works with. It's all of our kids 7-12.
But she does have two sections of sports performance at Monroe High School at the end of the day. So she is teaching two sections of sports performance.
And she's working towards a teaching certificate to be a full-time teacher?
Yes.
Are those classes open to all students?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep.
We've tried in the past. I do have some history on this. When Dr. Ray was aboard, we did try to do like football fundamentals, baseball fundamentals, basketball fundamentals, and that didn't seem to be the draw that they thought it would be. So they do know that the performance coach can help them with strength, help them with their nutrition. We really felt that this was a better way to go.
Can I add something?
Yes.
And thank you. And they thought kind of restructuring the course would open it up to a whole lot more students that might be a little intimidated by the entire football team lifting and grunting.
I understand
so,
that.
Yep, more friendly environment.
Okay.
The other part was Cindy left the one word out. So she has a bachelor's and a master's degree.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes,
she's working
she has both.
Towards just getting a teaching certificate.
Okay.
So she's highly educated.
She also works. This is she works from 9:45 until 6. So we've also given her a flex schedule, so that she is available after school because school is out by 2:30 or so. At the high school and the middle school's out at 2:45, so she does have time built in before 6 o'clock and can flex that too to even work later if she needs to.
Okay. Good.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So tonight I'm going to do the ratio of students to teacher first. Okay, so Andy and I had, well, we have conversations all the time, but last night after we had our first workshop, class sizes were brought up, and we didn't really have definitive answers for you at the time. But data tells the story of where we are with our ratios. So the first section of this paper is the number of students that we have. The total of students that we have, grades young five through sixth grade, is 2,119. Then with the next set of numbers is the number of teachers per building, per grade level, and the total number of teachers. And then the last section is the ratio of students to teachers and what that average is. And I do want to point out that young fives is 16, kindergarten is 14, and this would be 16 to 1, 14 to 1. And in some of our buildings, we have a special ed and a, well, in all four buildings, we have a special ed and a kindergarten teacher teaching. So it's really 2 to 14. So it's seven kids each to each person.
In every classroom?
In kindergarten.
In all kindergarten classrooms?
No, in at least one of the classes in the school. One of the kindergarten classes in the school.
And there's
we have...
How many kindergarten classes?
We have...
I know it's on one of these sheets from yesterday.
20. We have 20 kindergarten classes, and then we have four buildings that have one of the co-taught kindergarten special ed in each building.
Okay. So there's four of those classes are... for Darla's simplicity, two teachers.
Yes.
Okay.
So if you look at that last number where you have total teachers, total students, total teachers, and then the average, the least average is 16, and that's at young fives. And at sixth grade, the average is 24. And then the highest is fourth grade, that's 26. So we're well under... the contractual limitation for placement in our district in our elementary.
What is that
number? 31.
I remember that being high.
It is high. It's 31. And
Per the teacher contract.
And I do think it would be beneficial. I will include in board briefs for you a copy of the teacher contract.
Is it online?
It's online, but I can attach it. It's not difficult that you can look at the actual information that, I mean, you may want to know.
But we're obviously doing less than that. I think last night's conversation was ending up with the new changes. And I'm looking at you because we were talking, so obviously it's written on your face right now, that there would be a possibly 52 students co-taught within sixth grade. And then I went back through some of this data, because I was just kind of rambling, as it seemed like everything was like, so it looked on, what sheet was it? One of the sheets that it was possibly going to be 50 to 60 in that grouping per.
So that would be two teachers.
For part of the day, you said. There would be times that one teacher may do the total class.
No, one teacher would never have 50 to 60 students.
Yeah, so I thought that was the conversation yesterday.
So seventh grade, no one teacher would ever teach 120 kids, but there's four teachers and roughly 30-ish kids per class. So each teacher is teaching two subjects at the 5-6 level.
So why are our class sizes so big? I don't know why. It just didn't trigger with me until yesterday.
So
is that standard?
I guess I don't know what you're asking.
Because it seems like when we look at student data and we look at, like, what do we spend per student, you know, in that category, I think we're the second highest in the district on per student.
You mean in the county?
Yeah, in the county. Mm-hmm. What did I say, district? Yeah, in the county. And then you look at class sizing, and it always looked like we had some of the best class sizes based on the data that was put together on that. What's that chart? I know what I'm thinking about.
Well, I think there's a little bit, because I'm looking at the data that I pulled off the state site.
Maybe that's what I'm...
And there's a little bit of, I guess, discrepancy on some of these. For example, you show Arborwood with 19 students per teacher. The state says it's 16.4. And they're right on with Custer at 20, which is amazing. But then the big one is Manor. You show 24, and the state shows 15.5, which is substantially lower. Same with Raisinville. State has 19.9, and you show 24. So there's, I'm not sure where the state's getting their data.
The discrepancy could be, we just had count day. And not all the data that
this is last year's data.
It's last year's data.
Yeah.
This is real-time data. This was pulled from, I used the class list as my guide, from that the teacher supplied to Mrs. Joseph's office each week. And I did then do the verification of PowerSchool.
Yeah.
And PowerSchool is our record where the teacher of record does attendance. So it's our most accurate data. Plus, I had our pupil accounting individual that does that work. So what you're comparing this to is you're not comparing apples to apples.
Well, I think I know where the discrepancy comes from. Is obviously last year included Waterloo as a separate school.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've taken those students and put them into the other buildings. I don't know if one for one you added teachers or you some of the teachers... number of teachers stay
right.
the same.
I wouldn't think that would raise class sizes, though.
Well, if you didn't transfer all the teachers from Waterloo, they go
so
into existing classes.
What was the plan? I mean, was the plan to raise? I'm trying to follow along.
So our class sizes are small.
Yes,
the elementary. So all the teachers are transferred. I mean, our class sizes are small.
We
in
did
K-6.
Have a couple teachers retire from Waterloo, that. We didn't, like one was a special ed, she's back working half part-time for us now. And then we had another teacher that was a sixth grade teacher, and then we had a kindergarten teacher. Through attrition, which we haven't always replaced through attrition, we're really working on, if we don't need that person, we're not gonna hire them. We're not gonna just post to post. And we didn't hire new teachers when those two, you know, the three people retired. We didn't do that. So that's two less as in classroom.
But your question in regards to Manor, I'll pull that document right there you sent us and take a look at what it could be, because they have more than 15 teachers at Manor. I mean.
Yeah, and again, I don't know where the state gets their data from.
No.
So on this chart from last night,
mm-hmm.
this one that I wrote all over.
Yeah.
You look at fourth grade, if I'm reading it right, and you go across, and it says approximately 21. And then this one says 26. So
that's third grade. But that's a
it says fourth grade.
That's a proposed for next year.
Yeah.
So we're pretty close.
So then what you're looking at right now, this is current year. That was taking and moving numbers forward for next year.
So current third graders would be fourth grade next year.
I just don't know why we can't have smaller class sizes.
But they are small, Darla.
You consider 20 small, 20-something to one small?
These class sizes, and even those are small.
They are.
Like we talked about, like with the...
That's why I'm looking at Tom's data, and you pull up the data from the other schools and everything. I don't see people in the mid-20s, in the early 20s. Maybe I'm just seeing it wrong. I don't know.
Again, depending on where the state's getting their data, the only one in the 20s last year was Triumph at 22.8. It should have been what Jamie sent out. Yeah.
Carrie, what was your question?
I didn't see that happening.
Yeah, I mean, according to the state data, we were pretty much... equal to everybody else in the county.
Yeah, that's what I said when I looked at it.
In the upper teens, mid to upper teens.
What is?
last year's data as far as students per teacher, we were pretty much right in the middle to actually to a little bit to the lower end compared to some of them, but right there, competitive as far as class size.
In the teens.
In the teens. I mean, Custer was the high one at 20.
But these are higher.
So what we don't know is, does the state take like the total number of teachers for a building and divide up?
No, you didn't.
And it may be.
I don't know what the state's going to do.
Oh, these report. I thought these reports had been out forever, and I thought they pulled the data the same forever. I thought these have been around for a long time.
So the reports that Tom is looking at, he went and pulled himself off the state website.
Yeah, it's from the
It goes with the MSTEP, same database as the MSTEP.
Yeah.
But that, I'm saying.
Is it specifically say teacher FTEs, or is it just FTEs?
I'd have to go back and look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're talking about just teachers.
Yeah, I don't, they don't really classify.
That may be the difference right there. That may be the difference.
I mean, your assistance and other support is going to vary based on the needs of the students at each building. That's going to be very uncomfortable.
When we talk teachers, I think teachers.
Right.
Like, in the sense that we think teachers.
That's what I wanted to clarify, because I don't know specifically what Tom was looking at as far as what the state is saying that they're pulling.
Yeah.
They don't really go into a definition.
I'm sure they don't define it very well.
They just say students per teacher, period.
And the number of teachers that I pulled are actually what we have teaching in our classrooms today, and the students that they have real time today is what I'm giving you right now. The one that I think is the highest across the board is our fourth grade. And if you really think about it, fourth grade is where we take a jump from that low, very low class size to that we go higher to. Because in the contract, anything K1, 2, 3 is 25, and you go to 4, 5, 6, it's 30, 31. So that right there is a big jump for us, I think.
You know, when you think about what is the best ways, and I know everybody does it here because that's what we sit here for, what is the best way to look at how to improve scores? I mean, that's what everybody's here is. We are here to get a bigger picture, what do we call it, an airplane view or something, to look and see what it's all about. And so when we think class size, you always think, well, gosh, if there was more smaller class sizes, that would have to be helpful.
Mm-hmm. These are the smallest class sizes. I've been in this district.
So we can't make them any lower is what we're saying.
Well, I think they're low.
There's no thought to go lower.
These are already extremely low.
Okay. I'm just asking.
Where they went, when we started in the fall of 22, these numbers were considerably larger, class sizes were. Yeah. And so we've added quite a bit of staff to bring these numbers down to what you see right here, especially in the K-3 arena. To have low 20s is a very...
It's just a question.
Yep.
And there's always a group that's larger. Like, there's a bubble of kids. Like, I don't know what happened the year that these fourth graders were born, but that must have been a big year because there's always a 20... Was it 2020? No. Was it 4 years ago?
2020 to 24 is 4 years.
The fourth grade?
You're talking
fourth grade teachers in the audience?
I was talking 4-year-olds.
They were in kindergarten.
I was talking 4-year-olds.
Yeah, your 4-year-olds. No, they were in kindergarten. So,
right.
But, I mean, we have teachers in the audience tonight, and I know Beth Turner's here for the from the union. Based on your employment here in Monroe, I'm going to do a little dialogue with her. This is part of my skit. Where would you say we are with our class sizes?
So I teach young fives at Arborwood. I have 17. That is the lowest number I've ever had. I've had up to 31 in the past of young fives. Our kindergarten is sitting at 23 and 24 at Arborwood. That is just below the contract number of 25. I know last year the kindergarten numbers were much lower. Mm-hmm. I had 25 young fives and they had maybe 15, 16 kindergarten,
yep.
Which was really nice. Those class sizes being lower are much more manageable with some of the behaviors that we see in our classroom from our littles coming in. But historically, since I've been here for 26 years, These are some of the lowest numbers in our classes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Because it's true. They are the lowest that we've had.
So Arborwood kindergarten is no longer sitting at 23 to 24.
Well, that is what
they are today. Like, their numbers are 23 and 24.
And we have 14 here.
That's an average across the district.
It's an average across the district.
Again, I'm just trying to follow along because if I read a chart and it says it's 17, I'm thinking, okay, we're in 17. If I read 14, I'm thinking, okay, we're at 14.
Right.
Then I hear 23 to 24. That's like 10 more kids.
Well, Darla, I guess where I want to go with that is we just had count day. I wanted to compare what the class list said they had versus what Power School said they had, because that's the record of our students.
Right.
That is it. That's a state record.
Right.
So with what Beth said and what's here, there could be a differentiate. It could be different because of count day has not been finalized yet. We have 10 days after count day. So they may have kids on their books that aren't really here yet, that haven't shown up yet or are missing.
Yeah.
So until we have a final count of count day, we don't have like absolute numbers.
Yeah. I think on that, there was a range, like it says, you know, I see the average, but the range goes from 14 to there, you know.
Right.
How do we get to 14? You know, you would think if someone's got 20 some kids in their classroom and then you average in 14 at the low rate, you're not going to end up with an average of 14 students. So you would have to have a lower class size in order to do an average, because an average is a calculation of all of them divided by the number, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not the median.
Right.
Any of the math experts in here?
Continue on.
Okay. So that's just that is what we thought you would want to see. The next thing is Darla's favorite chart, and it is the...
I brought my...
Oh,
I think yours is updated, right?
We have
right?
new ones.
Good.
Oh. So what we have here, and you're not going to be... Oh, you can see it a little better up there. What we have here is, I'm proud to say that we have, in our district today, we have two openings for teachers. We have an ELL teacher that we need half-time that's going to work in our elementaries, and we have a special ed teacher that we need to hire. But we are a full staff other than those two positions. If you look at the classroom teachers.
What about the three resignations that are showing up
tonight? Yeah, they were
the registered behavioral technicians and tester.
Those are not class. We're talking about teachers.
Okay, only teachers.
We're talking about teachers.
Not assistants, nothing.
We're not talking. We're right now the name of the game for us is teachers. It does have admin, clerical up there, but teachers and on-court, teachers of record and on-court teachers are what we're looking at right now, Darla.
Okay.
So if you look at Arborwood, you can see, Dave, could you raise that up a little bit? Okay. You see Arborwood, this year they have 24 teachers, 462 kids, and they have, as you look down the classroom teachers, which are the classroom teacher of record, you see two names up there that are red. Those people are either working on a teaching degree, or they're like pre-teachers, or they are people that have a teaching certificate from another state that they're working on, and we pulled permits for them. Every person in this teacher section has to have a permit to be in our classrooms. And as you can see, there's quite a few at our Arborwood. You come to Custer, they had quite a few openings in the upper L. They have four. A couple of them are people that worked in a charter school or a Catholic school, and they need to get their accreditations shored up. If you go down the line to Manor, you have two. I know that one of those two is working. Both are working on their masters, and they will be teachers with us. And Harbaugh's finishing up her third year of being in that program. And I mean, we've been able to keep these people, and they have stayed with us. If you look at Raisinville, they don't have any of those people. But they have 19 teachers, the same as Manor.
So why do, they're in the 400s, they're in the 400s, they're in the 400s, ballpark the same, they have 24, they have 19 and 19. So the first column, there's 24 teachers, 462, yep. 19 to 442, and 19 to 445. What was the difference with the five extra teachers, with essentially the same student enrollment? What school is that?
Harborwood.
There's two buildings at Harborwood, and two at Custer. Well, Custer has 37 rooms.
I just saw the 24, the 19, 19, and just stuck out at me.
It could be because they have local-based classrooms. I know they do have two at Arborwood. I believe there's two at Arborwood, local-based. Terry? Are there two local-based at Arborwood?
One local-based, and then there's ECSU.
Yeah, they have two special ed rooms, so that would make up for two. Custer has two.
And they have teachers in them.
Yeah, and Manor and Raisinville do not
have
those local-based classrooms
or
ECSC,
right.
Which is what
we
last night they talked about.
Yeah, okay.
But as far as staffing, we're in pretty good shape. I need to knock on wood because every time I say that, something happens. But I think that as far as the elementary goes, I think we're in really good shape. Our certifications... whatever direction we choose to go in, or you choose to send us in, we do have staff with the appropriate certifications to be able to do that. We have a lot of K-5 people. We have a lot of people that have K-5 plus middle school, which is the 6, 7, 8. So we're,
the K-5s can teach preschool?
They can teach fifth grade kids. K-5.
But not preschool.
Well,
because last night was a lot about preschool. That's
well,
when you mentioned that, I thought that's
I
what you were talking about.
Or you can't.
Some people have older degrees. I think, like, can I call on you again? What is your degree in?
So I have certification K-8. To teach preschool, you'll need to have the ZA endorsement.
Right. Do you have ZA?
I do not. I have half of a master's program in it, and then I switched
okay.
to reading.
ZA is the endorsement that you need, but I know you've been here for 26 years, and over that time, it's probably changed how many times?
Several.
Yeah. Changes all the time. But you can take that at your leisure. If you have any questions, you can call me or go through Andy, however. But I know, Darla, you have questions usually, and I'd be more than happy to answer them.
So what about all the other additional staff? And the reason I bring that up is on our tour, there was a conversation, and it said that the reason we have more staff than we ever did, and the classroom then are required for the additional staff.
Yeah, I can speak to that.
Yeah, okay.
I'm gonna give you an example. Now, this is really going back to the dark ages. Let's go back to 2008. In 2008, I was an assistant principal at Custer Elementary with Joanne Weeks. We had the complex, we had a social worker from the ISD that worked in our building, and we had a halftime counselor that we shared with SMT. This is before South Monroe was sold and or was, got rid of it. So with that being said, and we had a custodian and a crew that came in at night. But as far as in assistants, okay, we had a lot of assistants as far as classroom assistants like parapros. But we didn't have any social emotional people, any restorative practice coordinators. We didn't have deans. I would have welcomed a dean. I did all the discipline for 1,250 kids. I'm not going to say I walked there in bare feet up a hill or any of that. But, I mean, now that we have people... We have more, our kids are needier than they've ever been just based on our society and, you know, and social media. But all of those people need a place to roost. like you have a restore, you have a school improvement coach. We didn't have coaches back then either. We had consultants, right, Terry? So all when I lived at Custer, we had rooms, we had extra rooms everywhere because we could to put kids in, because we didn't need rooms to put all this ancillary help in that we that our kids need. You need privacy when you're disciplining a kid, so a dean would need a place to be. If you're going to do a restorative circle with a group of kids, you would need a private place to be because that's not public knowledge. Medical, oh, we had nurses back then, but they came to our building one day a week and that was it. Now we have health liaisons, we have nurses. We have a lot of people that work with our kids every day and they need a spot to roost, is what the difference is. And that's that other list that you have there.
Yeah.
Positive school climate liaisons. I mean, I could go on and on and on. I mean, we've got lots of help. It's all come about really from like 2016 on. That's all come about.
Now, I still go back to the reason, you know, we sit here is the end result of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how you get there, we've talked about this several times, is on, you know, the administration, but the end result is where we sit on. And so when you talk about 2016 on, all this additional and adding on and all the staff and all of that, you know, our movement in grades and stuff has been so minimal that you would think with the addition of all of that, we would see stuff increase at a higher rate, and instead from probably 16 and on there was a gradual decline.
Well, you know? COVID changed the world, if you really want to be.
Yeah, but a lot of but even after COVID it came up in 23 and then it dropped again, but we can't always say, because before COVID stuff was on a decline anyway. So if I think Tom, you have those charts.
Yeah,
it's not COVID didn't throw a big wrench into the graph of Monroe Public
Schools. Pretty much
the
same slope, same
yeah.
Number
well,
slope.
And you know what? I think that schools across this county are not doing as well. Ida always does well, but that we have subgroups. We have enough kids in each group. We've got ELL subgroup. We've got special ed subgroup. All of those subgroups that we have because we're so large bring us down. Bring us down in our scores. There's subgroups that are attached, correct, Tom? I know you have
well,
to know.
I haven't split it out by subgroups.
All right, I think you might have a different viewpoint if you would look at the subgroups and look at them by special ed.
But they don't take the MSTEP. A bunch of them don't take the MSTEP,
well,
right?
1%.
1%.
1% of our students are allowed to be alternatively assessed.
Okay. 1%. So then you've got all these subgroups. That Ida doesn't have subgroups like that. Jefferson doesn't have subgroups like that. I mean, that's what the where the rubber hits the road.
Well, the state data doesn't allow you to separate by whether they have IEPs or 504Ps.
Well, but
it does allow you to segregate by ethnic group, and that's basically
that's that. Huge also. Poverty level.
So,
I mean, they make such a big difference in our scores.
But Tom's point, yeah.
But if you look at comparative schools, and you have to kind of go outside the county, like Adrian, which has similar number of students on subsidized meals, those types of things, they are significantly better.
I've not looked at Adrian.
Yeah.
But I have worked with our kids.
I would assume Bedford has kind of
the same
number.
Oh, no.
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 If you look at Bedford, roughly 25% of the kids are subsidized versus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they don't break them down to.
No. Right, let me go over overall district. That's elementary. This doesn't have subsidized. Okay. This is probably pretty indicative. If you look at Monroe, is probably on average about 60% subsidized versus 25 at Bedford.
Yeah, we're certainly, the only one who's really close to us is airports in the upper 50s, subsidized. So inside the county, that's probably the closest.
Do they have the same subgroups, Cindy's airport as us?
It depends. It's based on numbers. You have X amount of number to get to a subgroup.
Which is...
I thought maybe...
By grade.
You don't know that.
I don't know that. I mean, I could research it and do it, but I think...
Well, for the purpose of the conversation, when we think about, like, the added staff, we left out interventionist, okay, and that sort. So but the point is that we're trying to go through what the staffing model looks like right now. And yes, we have, when we talked about the classrooms and numbers there, that the model that we're working underneath right now is one that does work for us, and we are seeing our testing data begin to change. So to continue to go back and look at what have we done in the past, why we had these numbers, I'm not understanding the point of that conversation. Because we've already addressed, like, so you're continually going back saying, okay, well, why aren't we getting better testing results?
So I thought the purpose of these discussions is for us to be able to listen to what you have to say, listen to stuff that's being implemented, listen to the ideas of the behind them, so that we can make educated decisions in what we're doing going forward. And you know, I mean, it's just, look, there's a lot of stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to make all of this into one cohesive conversation that I can have that is honest, truthful, and says exactly what it is. And when I have all these pieces, I keep asking questions to say, okay, let me put it all together. So are we still looking at this plan?
We haven't. That's when we talked about, like, the co-taught classroom kindergarten. That's when she said there's four.
Yeah, so that you said the plan that we're putting forth, that's this, right? The environment.
So it all...
I'm trying to understand what the plan is. It's not this.
So what you saw, you see right there,
yeah,
that we presented to you last year,
right,
that's in regards to, as we look at our students of need, our special education side. So we talk about, like, the kindergarten classroom having one in each building as a co-taught classroom. That is being implemented this year for that plan. And so when that question came up a bit ago about each building have one as co-taught. So it is, we've introduced it there this year. And so we'll see how that data unfolds as we move forward.
And that includes all of these categories that you listed out here that will happen on a daily basis, like scheduled times with coaches, social-emotional lessons. You know, is that part of the same plan? Because when you talk a plan, this is what I think the plan is. And I might be wrong.
Right.
Am I wrong?
No, but I can't sit here this very moment and say, yes, every single thing is happening because I've not been in the classroom.
No, I'm not suggesting that you should. But this is the overall plan that all of this staffing put in place is to implement, right?
All we did was added to what we were already doing. So when we think about the staffing model, it's carrying it forward from last year.
Okay, that's fine.
So that,
but this is.
This was just being added on top of what we already
doing.
That's just one part of the plan.
Well, this was a pretty laid out plan when this could roll out to us.
Yeah, that's
this
just
was a pretty big deal when it came out because it was so new to us. Like, it wasn't anything we'd ever heard of before.
Right.
You had presenters come in and present on it, so it seemed pretty significant to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is significant, but it's just one piece, I think, of what the totality of what Cindy's presenting in terms of staffing.
I agree. Great, but when Andy said, you know, what the plan is, that's, I'm just looking at, okay, if this is the plan and this is trajectory, Cindy says these are the people and these are the things we're putting in place to go through that trajectory.
Yes.
Was there another plan for staffing tonight that I missed?
No, she was just going to update, we wanted to update on those class sizes because that was commented on last night, and then also so you can see, okay, where are we at this very moment in time as a staff. And I appreciate the clarity in regards to the staff that are working towards that certificate, because they are still certificated, and because we have to go through the process of the state. But then you also saw on there the red are those teachers. So And things that were just right now, one teacher short, was it?
Well, we have a half-time ELL. Also, one special ed. And that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I always appreciate a staff update. I do. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, so next on our list is, are there any other questions on staffing before we move forward? Okay. So next on our list is that Waterloo update. So I want to bring clarity to everyone from last night's meeting. A couple of different points is, first and foremost, I'm making it abundantly clear, last spring, and nothing has changed from last spring to now, that unless this Board of Education does something different, Waterloo will reopen as a K-6 building. As I said last spring to everybody, that there would be discussions this fall about what Waterloo, if it stays that way or if it should be something different. And from those conversations with individuals from our teaching staff to parents, that then a recommendation would be made to our board. Last night's presentation came about because 4 weeks ago we were asked, what's the plan? And so as we had to kind of lay out then what a plan could be for Waterloo, still holding to the promise of community conversations and parent conversations and staff conversations, it was a draft. The board tonight will only be taking action on Waterloo Bond Project, nothing else. Because again, that's what we said last spring and continue to say anytime I have an opportunity in front of anybody else, is that we know that we need to look at it. What we really wanted to look at, and from the Waterloo side of it, was the size of the building and then what those grade levels should range out to be. When it's all said and done, from the parents to the staff and community and even to the board, everyone have an opportunity to talk this out, and it could all end up the way it currently is, or there could be a change made. But that decision is not happening tonight. But when we were asked to present a plan, we couldn't just show Waterloo without showing the whole, what the impact is across the whole district. And so that's why we went down that path last night. The other reason why we went down that path last night with the ISD, and I'm going to make this abundantly clear because this came up from somebody this past summer creating a rumor that the ISD was being recommended to buy that building. That is complete falsehood. There's not been a single conversation around the ISD buying that building or anything of the such. The ISD was here last night to talk about preschool because we had a board member push out the question about us not leasing spaces anymore to the ISD. We wanted to draw attention to why it's important for us to continue to do work alongside the ISD for preschool, and that's why we had the ISD here to share that. But the overarching plan would be, as a proposal, as to how we can add more preschools into our district. So more of our kids, that we saw 609 kids in our county that are 4 years old, are unaccounted for. So offering that opportunity. So that was the plan. The ISD was here for nothing more than to show how they run GSRP and Head Start. Nothing more, nothing less. So again, as I state this one last time, being recommended to the Board of Education tonight is the Waterloo Bond Project only. There is no other conversations around closing that building, selling that building, or doing anything else with that building. Any further plans will be discussed as a whole with all staff members and others, because that's what was shared last spring. Nothing has changed. Last spring we said we would do this in the fall. I think we're about 2 weeks into now the fall.
I believe you are correct.
According to fall. So we're here. So with that for my board, when it comes to Waterloo, is there anything else you need to know from the bond side of it so that you can make a decision tonight on either voting the bond work through or not voting the bond work through?
I was looking for information on the ISD, how many rooms will they have in Waterloo then?
If Waterloo comes back anything other than a K-6 building, it would be just one preschool classroom potentially. And the preschool classrooms, they will not be adding, preschool classrooms will be added as it can. When we showed the model last night, it showed how each building would have potential space for preschool, but that's not a guarantee that that would happen. There's spaces available rather than what we look at now when that we don't, the spaces are not there. So in the shift, the spaces would be available. But in some buildings, it may preschool room may not be added because can we find, make sure that the population is there? It takes time. But it's ability to create space so that each building, each elementary, would have an opportunity for a potential preschool classroom. But as of right now, Waterloo would just have one.
I was looking for information on the contract with ISD.
Yep.
Like how much they paid. It's not.
Yep, Cassie has.
Right on to date, but.
Yep.
I know for October, we received $5,500 for the month for the rooms that they rent. I need to pull up two different attachments here. Sorry, I didn't realize we were going right into that.
We don't really need it right now.
That's okay.
As long as I can get it.
It's approximately.
At Arborwood, there's 5 classrooms that I have on the most recent agreement. And then Riverside has 5 classrooms and some other common areas that they're also using.
10 rooms at, and it's $550 I saw in there, so it's $5,500 a month or $66,000.
Mm-hmm. We spent $2 million on Riverside.
So again, you have to understand that Riverside, Arborwood, Custer, Manor, Raisinville, any of our elementaries, when it comes down to the splitting out of where you put your preschools, you're putting your preschools. So that's in that one building at Riverside. These are all of our students, by the way, that are in our that are being serviced by the ISD.
I know it. Your predecessor, I was indicating that it was her thought that perhaps we should look into taking over those classes. Now, not Head Start, but the other two.
So GSRP. So the challenges you would have as a system, as we actually had Katie last night do the presentation, is the ISD is very well versed in preschool and all that goes on in the world of preschool. We would have to take on then grant writing, receiving the grant, monitoring of the grant, plus right now the monies that we receive from the lease come in as a general fund revenue. And so if you bring these monies in through GSRP, those monies are then specifically tied to GSRP, and so your general fund revenue would decrease by that lease amount.
And so we can restrict that for anything we want.
And actually, the GSRP grant is a countywide grant through the ISD.
Right.
So even if we were to take on those, we would have to submit for reimbursement, and it's very restrictive and very limited what you can do with those funds.
Go ahead. The money that we receive now can be restricted for anything we want. There's no limits on what we can restrict or use.
It comes in as just rental revenue for facility rental, which just goes into the general fund revenues and isn't restricted in any way.
And we have the ability to do stuff that says we can't restrict it, right?
The board has the ability to restrict funds in your fund balance if the board chooses.
The last part of that, if for Monroe take that over, then you're also hiring all staff and taking on all that goes on with that. So that would be our undertaking.
I think the thought was that they would have perhaps more control over our students. I mean, that was the thought.
That we would have? Well, we have constant interaction with our kids.
Saying we don't. I'm just saying that was a thought.
Yeah. So, but no, it's but back to your original question, though, that as of this point in time, the ISD does support us in all of our preschool classrooms, and that's what they do around the county.
So, just I thought of something as I was listening to you two. I don't know a whole lot about the ISD and their involvement in our buildings. I'm going to tell you straight up, I really don't. So my question is from that standpoint. There's shared staff, right?
No.
So there's no, so they operate in one classroom only and they don't use any, like?
They use, in both of the agreements, there are some other non-classroom spaces that they utilize.
Yeah.
But the staff they employ are their staff. We don't have staff that flex back and forth.
Well, they use the cafeteria and the gym and all that
stuff,
right? Yeah.
Correct. Those would be some of the common spaces.
No, I understand that. I'm just trying. Mm-hmm. I said I have no idea how that relationship works. I really don't.
Yeah.
And so I'm just, when I listen to you two talk, I realize I don't even know what
and I about. Believe the Head Start classrooms eat in the classroom. I don't think all the,
really?
The younger students eat in the cafeteria space.
Huh.
I think some of, I don't want to misquote.
Yeah.
But I believe Paige, you indicated some of them do eat in the classroom. They come through the serving line, and then they go back to the classroom.
I just figured no one knew they were different, any different. That's what my impression would be, like no one would ever know the difference.
And I would assume the janitorial, custodians, maintenance, that's all our employees.
Correct.
Ourselves.
Correct. They don't, we as the building owner have to service those rooms still. As part of the lease agreement, they're leasing the space. They're not taking ownership of it or maintaining it. That's our responsibility.
Is there any way we could find out how much we spend on custodian maintenance, all those sorts of things for Riverside?
I don't know that we have it built We don't have it built separately by building.
No, I know we don't. I guess what I'm looking at is that we get $5,500. I understand that, okay? I'm thinking, what is our cost?
It'd be, so you take those classrooms and you take them, and so you, one of the things you could think about or where this conversation is heading is that you take Riverside as a traditional elementary, you're going to take those classrooms, you're going to disperse them throughout the district. And so you're still going to have those preschool classrooms. Unless the conversation becomes that you don't want to have preschool. Because these are our students that we're servicing. We're just having the ISD do it on our behalf because they are the experts in the preschool model in Monroe County. When we look over, like for example, at Arborwood, we have, I believe, 5 or 7 preschool classrooms that are ran over in that building at Arborwood South. And it's because we have the space there that they are housed in that building right there. If we had space at Manor, we would have a preschool classroom at Manor. We have one right now over at Brazenville, but if we could have more in those buildings, that'd be great. But we don't have the space, so we went to the areas that we have the space. So Riverside worked out for us right there because it is a early learning center. And so we made that adjustment there. Plus we put the ECSE classrooms we learned about last night, which is the early on special education classroom there. So that way we could increase the services for the ISD because when we had the services in multiple buildings, they were spreading out their staff in multiple ways. And so we worked alongside of them to streamline that so they could actually have more time in these two classrooms in that building instead of being on the road trying to service kids. So if you want to look at it per room cost, we can give you a per room cost for the whole district. I mean, we take the number of classrooms we have in the district, look at our bill that we have for cleaning of our classrooms in our district, and give you that per room breakdown that way.
That would be great if we could do that.
We can do that.
So we're talking about bond only.
Yes.
And I have to say I appreciated all the information we got last night on all of the bond breakdown because I truly, again, didn't know that because I didn't sit in this seat for all those years. So I truly appreciate that. And it helped me get a better understanding of what we're looking at with the bond money and what it can be used for. So the allocations that are currently in place are pretty much in stone is what we're looking at, right? Like, because you talked last night about the remaining dollars.
Yes, ma'am.
And so what they have been allocated is, because, you know.
They're not in stone. So those are, with Waterloo, we know what those numbers are. The projection on the remaining projects, Brazenville and Orchard, we'll be going out to bid here. I believe it's in about 3 or 4 weeks from now. So we'll actually have those in right around the Christmas time. So then you'll be down to Manor and the high school. So the Manor and the high school along with the Orchard and River Brazenville, those are an estimate. But that's with Clark using their estimating skills on all of that. So that those are an estimate.
Yeah, but they're pretty good at that. So
they're pretty good.
They come in pretty close.
So that's what your numbers would be.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
So the other project, the other bond projects that were set to be done, based on the information I read, like when I read these flyers, yep. It says, you know, these are things that we're going to do to each of these buildings. Those things, is there any way we have other funds to do some of this stuff in these other buildings? Because I think some of the stuff that was on here for these buildings, I think is pretty important. So how do we, you know?
We don't disagree on that. That's all important. And so it comes down to how, like I said, we wrote a grant. We'll see if we get that grant that would help take care of two of our buildings and finishing off those areas like we saw with Waterloo Manor and Raisinville. For the rest, it'll come down to the use of either sinking fund monies or going back to the voters. Those are, because that's the two funds that you would have.
Because the Monroe Middle School was like what stuck out to me last night. Yep. It really did, because, you know, there's been pretty much no bond allocation for one building in this grouping, and everybody else got something essentially. And so when I look at this and say, okay, we're going to spend $2 million on Waterloo, and if Waterloo needs $2 million, and that's what the money's allocated for, that's fine. But I still look at Monroe Middle and say, you know, hindsight's always good. You can always look back and say, okay, maybe that wasn't, you know, the way we should have allocated. So that's why I asked that question is, you know, is there any other way we can look at this, or this is just it? You get my question? You guys have been on the board for a while. You guys were here longer than this.
I think what you're saying, Darrell, is that, you know, we have X amount of money left, and we have X amount of projects that we have been approved for by the state.
Right.
They don't match because the number of projects are greater than the funds.
Right.
So in that sense, yeah, we have to make some choices on where we're going to allocate the rest of our money.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, if we wanted to, we could just say nothing for Waterloo, everything for middle school, whatever, not, I mean, whatever you want to do. But again, there's just not enough money for everything.
Right.
And that's why we've really tried to follow with the why is the bond 2020 important? Enhance the safety and security. So making sure that all the safety and security around our district, which is a secured vestibule, we talk about the fire alarms, we talk about the PA systems, and making sure that those items are done in all of our buildings. So that way we can go out and say, that has all been done. Those secured entrances, shared there. And then from that point forward, then what is those next level items that we can handle? And so we're appreciative that through ESSER funds, we got a lot of work done on HVAC. We had other areas where we were able to get bathrooms done as we went through. Some areas we had no choice. And I think that's the biggest thing we have to understand is we had a huge increase due to COVID, and then we also had areas where once you go into it, and I actually asked this question at the high school. So we think about the areas that we did this summer. So we had the area that was in the CT area, and the hallways got done right there, but none of the classrooms were touched. Why? Because they didn't have to actually go in there to change out any ductwork or do anything in those areas. Where in other areas, like when we went ABC wing and those wings, hallways, and above, they had to go in and change out all that stuff. So that meant that when you're going in there, just doing it all at one time. So when we look at that cost, that's why. So there were spots at the high school like that we're looking at, well, that didn't get touched, even though the hallway got addressed. Well, we didn't have to go into that room, so that room didn't get anything done to it. And so, but Darla, as we move forward with everything, that is our goal, is if are there ways that we can continue to get more of this other work completed? Yes. And that's what we continually do, is that these, like I said, the first item is if we get approved for any of this money that would come in from the state, well, that gives an opportunity. And then does the state continue to provide that kind of monies for us? If they do, great, we'll write for the grant. But then we'll just, and that's where we stay. This district does a really good job of adhering to try and keep $2 million in the bank from sinking fund, because the sinking fund would be the matching grant to fulfill those numbers from the state. So that's how we'll continually attack it right there.
Right.
Because we need $3 million, right, for our match this time.
So the project in totality would be roughly $3 million, so we need about $1.5 million.
Oh, I thought we was going to apply for $6 million.
No, we applied for three.
Three, just three.
Yeah.
Yep. Is that a max that we can?
There was no max. There's $50 million in the pot.
Ask for 25, Andy.
$50 million for the state of Michigan. So, So it's about asking for a small,
we'll smile.
At least a portion. Yeah. And so rather than going gusto, let's see if we can get something.
So I think the other thing in asking that question is, as someone brought up earlier, that I think it was you, Andy, that there's information that goes out to the public that is misconstrued. Mm-hmm. And I think the bond conversation became very misconstrued in the fact that understanding how does a bond work, and I've just learned that, so it's not something I learned before I got here, so you all taught me that, but how does a bond work? What does it mean when you say where you're allocating the funds for? And the understanding that all the projects that were allocated for the bond, as we just indicated, are not going to be completed for various amounts of reasons. But for the public to understand that the money that's being allocated for those bonds is set to be used for decisions that were made either before us and decisions we support, or in the best interest of what we have available right now. And I think it's fair for everybody to understand that we take it seriously, we've looked at it, and where we end up on it right now is where we end up on it.
And I think, as Indy said, one of the primary focus of the voters when we polled them was security. Mm-hmm. So that's why tonight we're going to do security for water.
Right.
Because that's number one.
Right.
Air conditioning is maybe five. I mean, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, ask the teachers that, but that's okay.
I'm sorry. Right.
But just that it's done. Yeah. It's serious stuff, and it's always taken seriously.
Good. Okay. Quick, more a question on the numbers, if I could.
Yes, sir.
Because I saw in your the bond project schedule summary that you passed out that we've already spent $684 million on Waterloo to date.
$683,000.
Yeah.
84,000. I'm like, where'd you get $600 million?
Sorry.
So
I'm like, man.
So with that, though,
I'm found our money.
What you have is there's an equal distribution amongst all the buildings for Clark and for Kohler.
Right.
Okay. Okay. That's my question, is what did that cover versus the $2 million that we're doing today?
Yep.
Okay. So the playground updates. So those first three or four bullets, other than the security system.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, the fire system was done, right, Dave? Not the fire system. I was trying to remember everything on our tour.
Electrical work.
Okay. And up in the HVAC. Okay.
We still have to do everything.
I believe it was.
Yeah.
It was. I think that's. Dave, was that a single phase building and we upgraded it?
Yes.
Yeah, that's part of the prep work that
was for the
fire.
For the HVAC, I think we had to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How much did we pay for that?
That was
I can you can start
getting ready for it was like before the ESSER work, part of the prep work for the bond work. I think it was I would have to look back at it specifically.
Does three phase go on Custer? Is that what it is? Or does it go back down?
Three phase, I believe it's there's two weird electricals we have in the district. One is at Waterloo. I want to say Manor's the other one. And that's why we're looking to get pricing on generators for those buildings. It's hard to find even a temporary mobile generator that will support that.
Where's that money come from?
Commercial.
We have a big sinking fund, huh?
We just generate numbers and bring recommendations.
Right.
Done that work there.
Right.
So we have approximately 10 minutes left. We'd like to, between Dave and I, we're going to do an update on that bond and sinking fund. Dave, you want to take that lead of talking about some of those projects we've been working on with sinking fund and even the wrapping up of the ESSER, because I think the ESSER amounts would be very beneficial to share tonight and how much we...
Do you want me to pull it? Just talk about
it. Just go right on down that list.
So if we start currently, we're...
Do we have this list?
We're going to give you this list here in a
Is that
so? We have that
on
list.
The screen?
Is that what you're going on?
We don't have this for the screen. This is more just kind of.
We'll be providing this. We're going to be providing this document to you in board briefs this week.
So I don't need to take notes.
No notes.
Okay. Okay, thank you. I have to write.
Mary's not here.
So we're wrapping up the ESSER projects like we talked about at Manor, Waterloo, and Raisinville. I believe, Cassie, most of that, the work has been done. We're just final billing on those projects. The same with the Sodexo projects at Raisinville, Custer 2, and Arborwood. Those projects are pretty much near completion. I think the final two fireproof doors are getting put in or have just gotten put in.
Yes.
So we should have completion.
The last update from Mr. Kohler.
So as a reminder, the ESSER funds covered at Manor Elementary, which was, again, putting new boilers, unit ventilators, air conditioning in there, was $2,425,000. Over at Waterloo, the same process was almost $6 million. And then Raisinville was $3.1 million.
So those buildings...
You said ESSER funds?
ESSER.
So those buildings, Mr. Shaw stated, we did not have to pull from the bond funds to do the boiler work, any of the piping, any electrical that went with that, the univent, the univentilators, as well as the air conditioning that was on top of the bond work.
What was the total ESSER funding on second and third round? I know the first round was pretty small. I can't remember. Was it 8 and 12? What was it?
Our ESSER 3 allocation was over $12 million.
For all three?
Just ESSER 3.
Just ESSER 3.
Was over $12 million.
I thought so. I'm trying to rack my brain on, and then we got ESSER 2 monies as well.
Yes, that came before that. Yes.
Yeah, that was what, 5, 6?
That one
I don't think
has
it was
been
as
gone
high
from my brain for a year, so I'm not... I don't.
I know. I'm trying to
remind
mine too, only because when he's talking about all this money, I'm just saying there was a considerable amount of money to pull from.
A little over $7 million in those three buildings for the mechanical.
Right. Yeah.
Out of ESSER,
we had over probably $20 million in ESSER funds.
I don't want to speculate without having that added.
Right.
Now. Moving on to Custer 1 and 2, we did order two generators that have been probably for over a year now. They've just been back ordered. They're finally just been delivered. That's something that Mr. Oley started a while ago that we want to get in. The electrical's all been done, but the generators are just not available. So they just recently got delivered. Hopefully we'll have those up and running for the winter season. That would help reduce any risk of freezing.
They aren't missing the part that Raisinville was missing, right?
No.
What was that part?
Raisinville's running.
It's up and running.
Yeah, remember that part that it was missing for a long time?
The switch, the transfer switches, that stuff's already been put in. The electrical's been prepped.
Okay. I just remember that being an issue.
Yep.
Yeah.
And those were, you're right, a lot of that equipment was on back order.
Right.
Supply chain issues, and that's starting to catch up. But it's still, that's why, to bring back up Waterloo and Manor, that's why we're getting pricing now on generators. So if we choose to do that, Kohler, the planning, all that stuff's been ready. So if we want to move forward, we can. The bleacher project is pretty much done. There's a little bit of cosmetic, some structural things that Kohler's working with another contractor to get wrapped up. But for all intents and purposes, that project is completed. Just some loose end punch work.
People like it. I hear people talk about it.
The asphalt work in the front, the painting, we kind of tried to put all that together. So there was a lot of cosmetic work that we did out there with painting the fence, painting the buildings, doing the asphalt for the path around the back, that trail that went out to 7. A lot of that was done that really spruced that area up, and it was needed. It was unsafe.
Updates on the restroom facilities out there?
So the restrooms didn't get a makeover, but Mr. Salamine did put in some new urinals, and we did some painting. But as far as doing a complete remodel, that was far above scope that we could just upgrade without bringing a proposal to the board.
What about the pump?
The pump? We're not going to talk about
there's
the pump.
There's a pump, huh?
They're working on that right now. So we're trying to figure out why it went bad again, if it was a failure in the pump, if there's so they think there might have been some electrical damage connecting the pump that was causing some draw, not enough power. So I got it. Mr. Salmbean was off Friday and Monday, and I was off. So we need to touch base on that, and we will put that in this week's board briefs, where we're at on that.
Football game Friday, right?
Yes.
But the temporary solution, I believe, is working well.
Don't
right?
Anything.
We're gonna thoroughly test whatever
well,
happens. Because
right?
We don't want that to fail again. Absolutely not.
No comment, Andy?
Nope.
The next big project, though, and we talked about, is this building. And we're getting
a couple of different proposals they're working on with Kohler right now and Kleinfelder to design some options, but they're all probably north of $1 million. And we'll look at the same aspects as we did at the high school, where if we have to do all that work, does it make sense to update some lighting if we're going to have to get access to ceilings? So that's what they're working on right now. And hopefully, in a couple of weeks, they're going to be presenting those options to us to see how that fits in the budget. We do have Arborwood North some parking lot work to do, and if the board does approve the Waterloo bond work, we want to do some parking lot work there post all that work.
Yep.
So our goal is when they come back in June, July, that building's completely done, and we're going to add some sinking fund project to that as far as lighting, LED lighting, some ceiling work, painting, carpet, to kind of give it a little bit of a once-over, if you will, on top of the bond work.
Well, didn't we talk about the fact that Waterloo was $2 million bond work plus additional sinking fund money? Yeah, so the project isn't just $2 million, it's $2 million plus.
We would bring those additional proposals to you once the bond work is approved.
Right.
And then to get those approved before
with four small toilets. Thank you.
We're not going down that road again.
Nope. So the last part when it came to, and I appreciate that, Dave, is in regards to this building, here in hopefully quite a few more weeks, but it won't be that many more weeks, the heat will be turned on, and you'll enjoy just down this hallway, you'll end up hearing what it'll sound like. And with the heat, with the fan, all that. So our concern is, and that's why we're watching it carefully, is we don't want to move into a spot where we're in a bad situation when it comes to the heat. There. So, but we've had Mark Kohler and Kleinfelder part of all this work to analyze what's going on right here. It's a big project, so more to come on that. But I know that last night we updated a lot on the bond. We've done a lot of conversations around the bond just even tonight. And we'll get you a quote, or not a quote, but we'll get you those numbers on the number of classrooms and the cost that we're paying. And what we'll do is we're just going to take the our current HES bill and take and break it down by the number of days, number of classrooms, and give it to you that way.
Well, is there any way we could get a more accurate number? For example, I mean, we have custodians, we have maintenance, we have utilities, things of that sort. I guess I just want to figure out how much we're spending on those rooms.
So you want the cost of, so again, though, for example, like we have Kids Club in that building. So that's our program. Rainbow Room is our building.
Yep.
So the cost of that building. I'll see what we can generate for you.
Sounds good. Okay. Oh, just one thing. On the HVAC for this building, what was the timeline again, Dave? What were we looking at, hoping for?
Well, first they're going to, I'm sorry. First they're going to look at the possibilities, because some of them could extend where we would have to vacate most of this building for, okay, 6 to 8 weeks, sort of like we do in elementary. Other solutions might be shorter term fixes, but we're looking at all those and weighing the cost, what we can afford to before we make a recommendation. But we're hoping to start as early as next summer if we could.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I can tell you if
it makes
loose, it'll come through the wall.
If it makes
it will,
it would be okay.
It's going to. That's all I have tonight, sir.
All right. All right. That concludes our agenda. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
Second.
Sure. Aye. This meeting is adjourned. The board meeting will...